Well, nobody's got a simple one.
Just put an umbrella over it.
That's what they ought to do, you know. There's ain't no way around it.
Well, you know, you say, Mr. Kvasnikov, just put an umbrella around us and leave us alone. That's what they did, in a way, with the Indians in the Lower 48, and they called them Indian reservations. That's what the umbrella was called. And Alaska natives said many times they didn't want reservations. So the question is, where do we go from here? And you want some way of making sure you don't lose your land, and some means of making sure you have the right to decide what happens on the land. Well, maybe we can work out the most up-to-date ways of doing that.
I noticed that too, since Grant came back, you know, there's a lot of change in the villages too, and the traditional lifestyle is going away, and the young people, you know, they're not like it used to be before. Well, I remember from way back, you know, when I was a kid, people used to help each other, you know, when somebody gets sick, they could help him, and whenever he goes out hunting and help me, you know, and pull up their skiffs and everything down there, and share their whatever they caught there, the whole village. But now it doesn't go like that. Whenever somebody catches, you know, they either they hide it or, you know, don't give. And
well, you know, I spent 3 years in the Canadian Arctic looking at the land claims of the people there. And they said the same thing. Well, these places have changed, and the people aren't sharing anymore, and this has changed, and that has changed. But the people are still there. They're living there. They haven't left the village. Some people leave and go to work in the big cities, but the population of the villages keeps going up. So what are those people going to do? And subsistence in most of the villages is the one thing that they can do if people are going to stay there. You may have some logging, and you may have some commercial fishing in places like this. But most of the villages in the Alaska, the main thing for the people is going to be subsistence if they're going to stay there. If you have any comments on that, I mean, what are people going to do in these villages if they can't make their living and can't get food and so on through subsistence?
Probably learn to depend on food stamps.
Mm-hmm. You're doing that already?
Yeah. At one point of these people's lives, they were very rich. They've hardly been off the land. And now it's being taken away, and they've learned to look at the government, because the government has food stamps to offer and energy assistance. So instead of depending on the land like they used to, it's now the government that's there with the handouts. And people have learned how to grasp onto those and depend on that instead of off the land.
Yeah.
The rich are becoming poor, and it wasn't rich with money, but rich off the land.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm sure that's very true. Mm-hmm. Well, any of you people like to add something? Which is the portable mic?
Have you been looking into the statehood thing about seceding from the federal government?
No, I haven't looked into that, and nobody, you're about I've been to 31 villages, and I've heard from about 650 people, and you're about the third that has said, how about looking into seceding? And I just don't think that's practical. They're never going to agree to that, so I don't see any point in, you know, you'd be kidding yourself, and I'd be kidding you if we started to talk about that.
I've been hearing talk about it, and I was wondering if you guys were looking into it or not.
Well, I don't...
Not looking too hard at it, then.
Not looking too hard.
There's some coffee here.
You know, the United States fought a civil war to keep 13 southern states in the Union, so they're pretty determined to keep this whole thing together.
Mm-hmm. What do the other villages think?
The other villages are talking very much along the same lines that you are, about keeping their land, about putting an end to the restrictions on subsistence hunting and fishing, and about how can they do what Vincent said, that is kind of keep an umbrella over their communities and their land, and defend their own communities and defend their own land. They're talking very much along the same lines as you are here, although it depends where you go, can be a little different.
Go with Barn Malott.
Pardon me?
Go with Barn Malott, you know, he wants to develop, you know, and keep going. You know Barn Malott, don't you?
Yeah, he came and spoke at one of our hearings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, he said that Byron Malott is the president of Sea Alaska. That's the guy you're thinking of. Yeah. He came to one of our hearings and he said, well, maybe there has to be a way of separating the land from the corporations to make sure the village people keep their land. That was one of the ideas he put forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's pretty smart, and he can keep up with it, and we're not smart, and we don't have the skills, you know, that we can do like that, like he was thinking, you know, and keep developing and just keep going, you know, and he's pretty young, too.
Just let me say a few words. Thank you, Vincent, for having us here in the village. And once again, Justice Berger, it's a pleasure to have you within the region. And I'd like to state for the record, you know, that my name is Edgar Blatchford, and I'm with Chugach Alaska Corporation, or Chugach Natives. And, you know, we've now visited most of the communities in the region, 5 of our 7 communities, and this is the 5th one, and then you'll go back to Anchorage this afternoon. But as we look at, you know, Anska and what has happened since Anska, I think a lot of us realize that Anska has not turned out to be what we had expected it to be back in 1971. And when you've concluded your visit to the 50-some villages in Alaska, you are going to write a report, and you'll take into consideration all the thoughts and the concerns expressed at these various meetings. And to the people here, I would encourage you to say what you feel about the Settlement Act, what you feel about what has happened to the villages since 1971, and what you think is going to happen after, you know, 1991. From the region's standpoint, we're interested in maintaining Chugach as a native corporation beyond 1991 and certainly beyond, you know, this century. The problem we face is that we were created by Congress and were forced to act as a free enterprise entity. We've adopted or were forced to live under all the rules and all the statutes that normally apply to normal corporations. But we are not a so-called or a typical corporation. We have shareholders. We don't have large blocks of shareholders controlled by a single person. We have 2,000 shareholders. Each one of our shareholders is entitled to appease the action, so to speak. And it's difficult for us to work within the system. The expectations of our shareholders have not been fulfilled, and I certainly don't believe that we'll be able to fulfill all the expectations of 1971. And certainly at the regional level, we're severely limited in what we can do as we travel around, you know, the region, and we meet with people outside of our region in Seattle and Portland and Anchorage. You know, even in California, you know, there's the concern for the bottom line. How much money have we made this year? And specifically here in the region, the people look to us for social leadership, in some cases political leadership, and certainly economic leadership. And you know, even though Chugach has a base of $30 million, and what we can do with that or our equity in that is quite limited. There's not that much that we can do. And so we strive to work for a positive bottom line, because we feel that the only way that we can treat all of our shareholders equally is to make money and then declare profits from the money that we've made. But, you know, how much money can we distribute to the shareholders depends on how much, how successful our business operations are. And here in the Chugach region, we can look at fishing, and most of you know that fishing from the processor side and perhaps from the fisherman side has not been all that profitable. We can get into timber, but you know, the timber market is severely depressed. We can attempt to create other business ventures, perhaps on a slope as we have, and then we could try to encourage, as we certainly are, the employment of our shareholders. But even at that, we can only employ very few of our people up on the slope, very few people on the maintenance of the pipeline from Valdez or up to Prudhoe. So, you know, in light of all that, I'm certainly hoping that the Budget Commission will come forth with some solid recommendations as to what we might look at and to solve some of the problems that we are now facing. The big fear that we now have is what's going to happen in 1992 if the Act remains the same. We have an increasingly large body of people who are now called non-voting shareholders. Each time one of our shareholders passes away, more of our stock falls into non-voting hands. Not in all cases, but a lot of the times. We may have 200, we may have 150 to 250 non-voting shareholders. People who are not Alaska Native don't meet the blood quantum. And they're scattered all across the United States. And then, of course, we have shareholders who are at least a quarter blood who are also scattered all across the United States and have been removed from Alaska for maybe one, two generations. And their identity with the land is perhaps not as strong as that here in the communities. So, but because we have the mandate from Congress that we are to be a free enterprise corporation, we have to treat all shareholders equally, at large shareholders and village shareholders, and that's a very, very difficult task. So we come across, because we have to live under those constraints, we tell our people that we are a Native corporation, but we are also a free enterprise entity, and we strive to work for a positive bottom line, that is profits, and eventually distributing something to the shareholders. But even if we made, you know, $4 million and decided to distribute $2 million to our shareholders, that would be only $1,000, to each shareholder in 1 year's period. Significant amount right now. But it's difficult to work in the free enterprise system when we don't have the trained people. And here in Alaska, you know, we're so far removed from the rest of the United States, and the climatic conditions in our region are not always susceptible to economic development. When we look at economic development, we look at development as being in the long term. We talk about Bering River coal. And that is, if we were to sign the papers today and decided that we were going to get into the coal mining business, it'd be 7 years before a ton of coal was moved out of Bering River. And how many years after that before it became a profitable operation? We talk about timber, that we'd like to cut trees and export timber. But of course, we don't know what's going to happen with the timber market. The bottom might fall out and we'll be stuck with all the development costs. So, you know, we certainly we're happy that Justice Berger is here in our region. Chugach contributed a little bit of money to the commission, not very much, but a little bit, and we invited him to come within our region. We didn't tell him, we didn't tell him where to go. We encouraged him to visit our areas, and because we think he's doing something that has needed to be done for a long time, and that is to listen to the shareholders and to come to and to reach his conclusions independently of any outside influences. And though I've followed him around, I've not really tried to persuade him one way or the other. And I think, you know, that we all ought to be as free with our words and comments as we feel we should be. And I certainly hope you feel comfortable to tell him anything. You know, if you know, I'm comfortable.
Have you people done anything to help us protect our land?
Certainly. Chugach finally got a land settlement in June of 1982. And because 1991 is less than 7 years away, we have to face with, we're faced with the need to make, firm plans on how we're going to protect the land. In the Chugach region, we have some real powerful taxing authorities. Here on the Kenai Peninsula, you have the borough. And if we develop any of our land here on the peninsula, then we're going to be facing the, you know, the taxing power of the borough assembly. There's some talk that that there will be a borough created within Prince William Sound. And we certainly want to be in on the planning stages. Because when they start looking around for property to tax, they're going to look at native land. We're looking at all the recommendations that are coming forth from, you know, the AFN and from independent sources as how do we protect the land. Right now, it's going to be difficult, I think, to amend the Settlement Act. I think that it's going to be difficult to work with all 2,000 Chugach shareholders, because each shareholder is entitled to his rightful share as defined under the law. And but you know, I'm positive that something might be developed, but I don't know what. Chugach, you know, all I, you know, you know, to conclude, you know, Chugach is really, really concerned about what's going to happen in 1992. You know, we face the prospect of being Chugach, Atlantic Richfield, Chugach, Anaconda. We could be a part of United Airlines or a part of developers down Lower 48. And once you sell your shares, if enough of you sell your shares out to a major company, they can control Chugach. Yeah, Vincent.
Which shareholders are more at large or in the villages? Are they about 50-50?
No, 55% of our shareholders, Vincent, are at large shareholders.
At large. Mm-hmm.
45% are enrolled to village corporations. But then we have at-large shareholders who live in villages, and we have village shareholders who live in Anchorage or the lower 48.
Now, which shareholders are given a lot of pressure? At large or?
We get, well, it's hard to, well, I guess it's, you know, just when I look at the pressures. We receive pressure from the lower 48 shareholders, you know, in the context of have you made any money this year, and is there a is there a positive bottom line? In our recent past, the kinds of pressures we received from our shareholders in the villages related to can you help us? Can you help us in Juneau? Can you help us in Washington, D.C.? Are there loans for the acquisition of boats or houses, or can you help improve the quality of life here in the villages? Which is really different from the concerns expressed by at-large shareholders, you know, and outside of the region, particularly in the lower 48.
Is there any way as a corporation
to get first shot at the shares that are being sold in 91?
Perhaps the judge can, you know, he sat on the bench and might be able to explain this to us, but the region can have the first right of refusal. I don't know whether we can make the family the first refuser. Is that possible, Judge Bridger?
Well, under the law now, you could give to the family the first right to buy the shares back, or you could give that to the corporations. The only problem with that is, well, there's two problems with it. One is that if the family's going to buy the shares, they have to have the money to buy them. If the corporation's going to buy the shares, they have to have the money to buy them. So a buyback provision doesn't mean very much if you don't have the money to buy them back. But you can do that now under ANCSA. The other problem with that is that if enough people sell out and the corporation buys back, then you get a smaller and smaller body of shareholders who, let's say in this village, wind up owning all the land around here. And I don't think the implications of that have been thought through very carefully. But you've got that buyback now. Your corporation could arrange for the buyback. But suppose somebody from Exxon or some big outfit comes around here and offers to buy shares, then the family sure can buy them back, but they might have to match Exxon's offer. Your village corporation could buy them back, but they would have to match Exxon's offer. Or take the example of Chugach. You've got 2,000 shareholders. Let's suppose Exxon wants to develop the coal. I assume you own some coal-bearing land. Exxon comes in and says to makes a tender to all the Chugach shareholders, all 2,000 of them, and offers them $10,000 each for their shares or whatever. I mean, I just pulled that figure out of the air. I don't have the faintest idea what they would offer. Well, if Chugach wants to make sure Exxon doesn't take them over, then they've got to meet Exxon's offer and buy up all those shares. Well, does Chugach have the money to do that? I don't know. If they don't have the money to do it, then the buyback doesn't mean anything, because it means buying them back at market value, at the price that you could get for your shares if you went out to the market and sold them. So you can do the buyback right now, but I'm not certain how far it gets you. That's what troubles me.
Can we, you know, like, there's 2,000 shareholders. If we put it all together as, you know, like the village, as one corporation on the shareholders, there, I mean on the shares there. I see 100 people there. 100,000 shares. Can we work as our own corporation like that?
I guess I don't follow you. You've got a corporation here.
Yeah, we got a corporation, but can we put our shares all in one, like a little village corporation, like our own, you know, Cabascos and Moons and Tanapis and all that? Can we put that as a corporation share after 91? Like, we'd be owning 25% of your outfit.
If I follow along, I think a family could probably create a corporation to buy shares of stock in English Bay Corporation, or any one of the families here, or any group of people could create a corporation to buy stock in English Bay Corporation. The same thing with Chugach.
That's one way of protecting our shares there, but
you know, when you look at Chugach, you have to realize that we're a very tiny, tiny corporation in the world of corporations. You know, our books show $30 million in assets, in which we carry our land at zero value. And you look at the other corporations across the world, you know, they got $30 billion, $100 billion. You know, our partners in the Bering River Venture, you know, they're the four largest corporations in Korea. And Hyundai is one of the largest corporations in the world. And $1 million to them is just peanuts. But it's a hell of a lot of money to us.
How much would it cost to put a road into Catella?
Just to do a pre-feasibility study on the transportation corridors out of Catella, it cost the state, we went to the state and got the money, it cost the state around $600,000. Generally, I think you've got about 50 miles of road there. I think it takes what, $500,000 to $1 million for a mile of road. I think that's the general figure. So you're looking at $25 to $50 million to put a road in.
Well, the road's out to 27 miles.
And you know, there's lots of obstacles in the development of Bering River, just environmental concerns. You know, as when we went through the land battle, our major opponents were people involved in the environmental community. The various environmental organizations were opposed to giving any land to any private entity, and that meant that included a native corporation, because they were afraid that we would develop the land and just disrupt the environmental systems. Of course, we had to fight a multitude of federal agencies and state agencies to get a land settlement. We were 10 years after ANSCA, 11 years after ANSCA. And so, realistically, you know, Chugach is 11 years behind the other regional corporations in developing or identifying and making plans and developing land and natural resource policies for what we have on 1 million acres of land. Surface, subsurface.
You're 10 years behind, but you do have the advantage of learning from
their mistakes.
Their mistakes over 10 years.
Mm-hmm. The mad rush is on, though. You know, rushing towards 1991. If there are any other questions about Chugach or the region, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Yes, when I'm going to get my Indian money?
Vincent, that's the question that I'm asked 12 months of the year every time I meet a shareholder. If you're an at-large shareholder, there'll be less than $100 distribution from the 7i funds in October, sometime next month. And of course, and there'll be the 7i distribution to the village corporations too, you know, during that time. Profits, you know, I can't predict profits. I can only say that during the first quarter of this year, Chugach had a $120,000 after-tax profit in the first quarter of this year. We have to make money until before we can declare any dividends.
Have you been looking into the, have you been looking into the, I read in a newsletter from CIRI about changing it around to where you have 20 years after transfer of the land. Is there anything going on with that fight?
That's, I think, one of the many proposals under consideration by the regional corporations. Do you want to amend the act? Do you want to restrict the alienation of shares? And do you want to open it up to, you know, the afterborn after 1971? You know, we're certainly looking at all of those proposals. And but the Chugach board is not going to say this is the proposal that we think is best for the shareholders of Chugach, Alaska. And the process we're going to develop is the one which very similar to Justice Berger, and that is to go to the shareholders first and get their thoughts, and then go back to the drawing board and attempt to develop some guidelines, and then go back and ask the shareholders if they agree with what we think they have told us. And then finally the board would adopt something, but it's only after listening to the shareholders we do that. So.
Thanks, any other views on ANCSA 1991? And now that you know when you're going to get your checks, we can.
Spend it wisely. Make house payments.
There's another thing I think ANCSA is affecting to the village here, you know. Before, the people I used to see, you know, oh, when that teacher, maybe white man, come in here to the village, just, you know, treat him like a king or something. But now you see somebody, any white man come in, and somebody wants to kick him out right now. This is my land, get out, you know, and just kind of makes the lifestyle really different from how it used to be before.
You say there's been a real change in feeling toward white people coming in, eh?
About 10, 15 years now, you know, there's a lot of change there. I noticed that. Before, when the white man comes, you know, we used to go and, you know, treat him real good and bring him up to the house and, you know, give him tea, whatever. But now when the white man lands down there, you know, everybody's mad and they want to kick him out because of their land, I guess. And, they do have that feeling that, you know, they own the land and everything and they don't want nobody to bother them. And there's a tension there, you know, that these people will do something, you know, in the villages like that, you know, it's real easy. And most of us, and I noticed that there was only maybe 5-6 people, you know, when this land claim happened here back in 71, that the representatives, like I'd say McCutcheon maybe, Greening and somebody else, you know, and they were pretty much involved. And those people knew it, and people back here in the village didn't know nothing about that. So we still don't know what the land claim is. And other villages, same thing, you know, the whole state. Nobody near it, and a lot of us don't speak English, you know, and we don't understand. So we just don't know. And they gave us 20 years to do it, and we couldn't do it in 20 years. They should give us more time, maybe. So I don't know.
Well, I don't think you'll get more time. But if you did postpone 1991, you'd still have to face it later on, and it might even be worse because the pressure might be even greater, you know.
Who do we blame, Nixon and Scoop Jackson?
Well, I don't know whether you can blame anybody. You know, it's something that happened, and here it is.
They thought it was a good thing for Alaska Native.
Yeah, they thought they were doing something really good. They genuinely believed that they would make you all shareholders. You'd be businessmen, you'd be capitalists, you'd have corporations, you'd have money, and you'd become part of the mainstream of America, and you'd be just like everybody else. I think that was what they intended, and they thought that would be a good thing. Well, you've decided that's not what you wanted. You didn't want to just become like everybody else. You wanted to remain Indians and Aleuts and Eskimos. And
nobody's got the skills, you know, to do that. It's the problem, I guess, or something.
So it's one of those things that, as Edgar said, didn't work out the way everybody anticipated. Well, okay, what do we do now? And
put umbrella in the boat.
But you see, when in 1971, when they passed ANCSA, they extinguished your subsistence rights. Well, if they'd come out to talk to you, they probably would have found that that was a very important thing. And they wouldn't have done it. But they did that because they thought, well, you can have corporations and you can develop resources and you can all go to work for your own corporations and then you'll all be better off. Well, they didn't. They didn't know an awful lot about the way things really happen in the real world, I guess.
That's where we are now.
Just speaking that mic.
My name is Mike. Like a lot of us right now in the village here is realizing what mistake we made in this corporation. The first one was timber sale. We thought it was going to work. We thought we was going to be rich, you know, for timber, selling timber. But we didn't. We had a couple of dollars came to our shareholder here. And the second one was buying barge. That was another mistake we made. We thought we was going to develop, you know, make money out of it. And it still didn't work. So, to me, like, I'm talking about myself, to me, like, I think what mistake we made in the past, we all have to look back and correct those, and starting today. like in, for example, I can use what happened to Ford Avenue last winter for Native people. Native people not, it's all over in those villages. They thought they owned that land, but after they wrecked that Fourth Avenue, a lot of them were
Fourth Avenue hurt. Anchorage.
Yes, they were hurting. And a lot of them thinking today, that's what's gonna happen in 1991. With the land, or subsistence. And I think a lot of people are realizing from beginning from 1971 when the first Native Land Act came. And I was scared. Like about allotments and town sites, but now I can understand little. You know, I was really scared, maybe if like tax comes for like how are we gonna pay taking our lands away from us. But coming to the meetings here, now I can understand little, little by little. That's all I have.
Yep. Thanks very much.
On this 160 acres, you say we don't have to pay taxes on it, or?
Yeah, on native allotments, you don't have to pay taxes. Even after 1991, you won't have to pay taxes on native allotments.
Oh, that's all protected then?
That's protected. That's okay.
Oh, okay.
Does that also include that the lot that you are living on?
That depends.
Oh, that's the town's
If it was surveyed by state, then it would be taxed.
Well,
this has been surveyed by BLM Federal.
Yeah.
Now the state can't come in and try to tax us on our townsite lots.
I think you're okay on the native townsite lots. Mm-hmm. It's really the land held by the native corporation that could be taxed. The 63,000 acres that you got.
Lots are the
yeah.
ones that are not taxed, but the ones that are not restricted, they
won't
be taxed.
Yeah, that's right. That puts it very well. The restricted deeds won't be taxed.
The borough can't come here and tax us.
No. But if your 63,000 acres is within the borough, and after 1991 they impose a tax on it, well,
which they were trying to do already, but we told them, you know, they can't do it till 1991, I think. The borough's been trying to tax us.
The borough can't tax you.
Well, the borough, if there's 63,000 acres, is in the borough. Mm-hmm. And it's after 1991, they might be, they might, if they decided to impose a tax, well, you'd have to pay it.
Hmm. How would you get out of the borough if you wanted to get out?
Well, I think that the state legislature would have to change the boundaries, or you would have to do what Vincent said, get a legal umbrella over your land so the borough couldn't tax it. And that's one of the things that you might do by putting it in the land in the land bank. You might by turning it over to the IRA or to the traditional council, or by putting it in a native trust. But those are the things we're looking into.
Now, if we become an IRA, then would the borough still tax us?
No, the IRA government's land is in the lower 48 is held in trust by the Secretary of Interior and can't be taxed by anybody. You have a people at Metlakatla in southeast Alaska own an island, and that island that is held in trust by the Secretary of Interior, and the state can't tax it, the borough can't. They can tax themselves. They can impose a tax on their own property if they want to.
How much
trouble
is it?
Well, that remains to be seen. Venati has already tried one way of getting their corporation land into an IRA. I think if people wanted to do that all over Alaska, a way could be found for them to do it. What I'm trying to find out now is what they want to do.
I think they'll think of something else, you know, and they're going to charge tax us anyway or something. They'll change the regulations or something's going to happen.
Well, I guess you have to stay one jump ahead of them. I don't know. But you better not be one jump behind.
How is that Vinatai
Well, that was kind of complicated, but they...
Pretty complicated.
They think that they found a way of turning corporation lands over to their tribal government. And but there may be a better way than the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they tried to do it. And it so far worked for them. I shouldn't be criticizing it. I'm just saying that there may be even better ways of doing it. Mm-hmm.
So we're just going through these villages and
the survey?
Well, it's not a survey.
Well, what is it then?
It's just hearing people like you and finding out what people in the villages think. But I'm not taking a vote or anything like that, you know. I'm not counting heads and saying somebody want to do this and somebody want to do that. I want to just find out what the thinking is.
So what are your thinkings?
Well, I'm thinking hard, and I'll put my own thoughts together when I've finished my travels through the bush.
Well, you can, if you get anything down good, you can get yourself a bunch of lawyers there and help us out, I guess, huh?
Well, I'll put it down on paper and send it to you, and then you can decide what do you think about it. My object is this: if I can go around Alaska, listen to what you got to say, people like you here, then I'll write up a report based on what you tell me. I say, these are the concerns of the people who live in the villages. Here's the way ANCSA has worked out for them. They want to protect their land, their subsistence, whatever. And then I'll say, here's how I think it can best be done. Now then, if I've been able to reflect truly what you've told me, then you can go to Congress and you can say, look, this guy traveled around here, he went every place, listened to the people, here's what he had to say, and he got it right, so this is what we want you to do. Now that's, if I can do that for you, I will...